Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today, I'll be interviewing E.A. Sulkovitz. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you'll receive alerts when new episodes are available on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So, E.A., you began achieving success at a really early age. I know at 16 years old, you started your own business selling janitorial services to business owners. 19, you met an impactful business mentor you talk about. You began working for him in the diamond business. In 1980, your mentor established a private grant meant to be a part of his legacy. And for over 45 years, you and your mentor began formulating heart healthy and wellness nutritional food and drinks. You started numerous other businesses. You hosted a business radio talk show. You authored weekly newsletters. You became a millionaire in your personal income by the age of 33. You've authored several books, and the accolades just goes on and on, the accomplishments you've garnered over the years. Did you see this happening at an early age, or did these things just begin to happen when you just put one foot ahead of the other?
That's a great question. And Maurice, thank you for having me on your great podcast. And as I was listening to you say those things, sort of off my bio, I guess you could say that, a little bit on the background, I was still thinking, well, none of that's as long as my last name. So I still have to get to work. people look at that last name and they go, you got to be kidding me. But the key with the last name is the C is silent. I tell everyone, forget the C is even there. Sulkovitz is, flows off the tongue easy. But when you look at it, you go, what in the world? To answer your question, I can share with you that there were a lot of things that happened, a number of blessings that happened in my life that were not necessarily the exact same way, that I wanted them, if you will. I've always believed, there's God's plan and there's my plan, and my plan don't count. But I did throw things out there, if you will, and said, I'd like to do that. I'd like to do that. And I'd like to share, if I could, with your listeners, a couple stories, anecdotally to, what you had sort of mentioned, if I may.
Yes, of course.
My upbringing was very humble. My father was a milkman. I was born and raised in the greater Chicagoland area. I live in Michigan now, but, the greater Chicagoland area, an area called Oak Brook. At 5 years old, I would help my father deliver milk. And back then milk came in glass gallon jugs and all the milkmen that went through the neighborhoods, of which my father was, he had his own route. So it was a one-man operation, and as were the milkmen, if you will. And I remember him saying over and over again, and it really stuck with me. He would always say, every time I was with him, and I was 5 years old at the time when I would work with him, he always said the same words. He said, when we're done, we're done. And the point was that, that if we get on with it and we do everything we need to get done for the day, then we're done for the day, and we can do whatever else we want. So I guess that was sort of my first little touch with the importance of being a self-starter. He didn't punch a time clock. He didn't have to go to an office a certain time. He didn't have a boss, looking over his shoulder, if you will, saying, do this, do that. He had to get up at 3 a.m. all by himself, and he drove his truck over to get the ice because he had these big 6-foot sheets and blocks of ice that had to be cut up. And then they put those in the truck because the only trucks that were refrigerated were the big 18-wheelers. So they had to cut up ice to put in the small ones, which my father had, delivery trucks, if you will. And I remember that, he just said that over and over again. And it sort of stuck with me that, you don't need to have someone over you, don't need to get on with it, do what needs to be done. And then you can do whatever else you want to do after that. So, And I always sort of put the more, and I think psychologically, it always put me in the position of putting the more challenging things first in the day too. You know, the things where, you know, I was maybe going to be the freshest, you know, during the day and, you know, in the morning and after working out and, you know, do my morning regimen, if you will, and hitting those things first and getting on with it. And so then at 16 years old, I got my first step into being successful. And that was, you know, getting a job as being a janitor. I sold commission sales janitorial service. I got paid a commission. Too. A lot of the ones that I sold, I cleaned, like a chain of bowling alleys and, you know, clean those at 2 a.m. and other businesses and stuff. So, but during the day for a few hours, I would go out and bid these jobs and, you know, on, for janitorial services. And I was working on commission. I get 10% commission, you know, every time I got money from the account, whatever we got paid to janitorial service, I got 10%. That was the deal. And then when I cleaned, I got my hourly pay. You know, and it was interesting because the people I talked to, you know, they already had, you know, 100 janitorial services. They all know they hired the very possible cheapest help. And here I am, a 16-year-old snot-nosed kid, telling them we can do a better job than anyone else. And I'm a kid as it is, you know. I think a lot of the business owners just sort of went along with it. They said, well, you know, I got to hand it to him. He's getting out there just doing it. So they sort of had like a smile, you know, and said, all right, I'll give you a shot at it kind of thing. And I think that worked to my advantage. But there were two things that happened in my life, actually getting around eventually to your question, that were pretty significant. One was at 16 years old, Maurice, I was able to be bonded, which means I could be insured. And that means I could go in expensive places. So if my buffer when I was cleaning hit a piece of equipment, the insurance company would cover it. That also allowed me to be in very expensive locations, including expensive homes. And one of the homes I was able to clean, and I was in there every single Wednesday, was the lady whose name, when I say it, it won't mean anything to you until I make the movie reference. The lady's house I cleaned every Wednesday was June Martino. Now, if you ever saw the movie, it's with Michael Keaton. The name of the movie is called The Founder. And it's about McDonald's, and Michael Keaton plays Ray Kroc. And I can tell you, because I lived there, I lived the whole McDonald's phenomenon. You know, I lived in Oak Brook, which, you know, the world headquarters for McDonald's was in Oak Brook for decades and decades. It's not now recently moved, but for decades it was there. So I witnessed, you know, and the first McDonald's franchise was in Des Plaines, Illinois. And we drove by it at the end of the milk route every day when I was 5 years old. So, you know, I witnessed this whole thing personally. So I can tell you the movie is very Hollywood spin. Ray Kroc really wasn't the way he's portrayed, but there were many events that the movie does, you know, sort of give a nod to, I guess you could say, in the movie. By the way, did you see the movie by any chance? It's called The Founder.
Yes, I did.
Okay. In the movie, when you see Ray Kroc, Michael Keaton, he's always talking to a lady outside his office. June this, June that, June that. That lady is the lady whose house I cleaned. And that's June Martino, who, when I met her, had the third most controlling stock in McDonald's and was already an icon. But I was in her house, you know, every Wednesday cleaning it. And I was there very much to buff the floors with a special buffing pad, clean the swimming pool, clean out the garage. By the way, loved cleaning out the garage because in order to clean out the garage, I had to pull out the Rolls Royce. Now, I got to sit in a car that was 10 lifetimes of my income. And then at night, Maurice, I'd go home and I would drive my Rolls Canardly, which basically is the kind of car that it rolls down one hill and, well, it can hardly make it up the next one. So that was my Rolls Canardly. And so here I was sitting in, you know, June's Rolls Royce. And I would clean the garage 3 times in one day just so I got to pull the car out each time, right? But here's the thing that was amazing. I always thought, and I don't know why. I don't know why work came from or anything. And again, this is to your question. I always thought to be successful, you had to be a jerk. You had to be me only oriented. You had to be me first oriented. You had to be the first one to say it's only business and just, you know, be the first one to push people down. I don't know where that came from. I don't know why I had that thought, but I did. And then when I met June Martino, she was so the opposite. It astonished me because it put my mind on its side. I just thought, you know, she's the opposite of all of that stuff. I thought I was so wrong. And here she is. She's very approachable, very nice. She's got a full-time maiden butler, never condescending to them. If I was Buffin, in one of the rooms in her home, and she walked through, and it was a $1 million mansion, you know, back when I was 16 years old. I'm 65 now, so that was, you know, a long time ago. Who knows what the house is worth now? Multi-millions, I'm sure. It was an area called Ginger Creek, which also was Oak Brook, but it's where the real exclusive people sort of lived, if you will, in Oak Brook area. And Oak Brook itself wasn't, you know, it was a nicer area. So as she walked through the room, and if I was looking down, buffing the floor, she would say hello to me first before I even saw her. So she was that approachable. And that was just amazing to me. And I thought, man, this woman, she doesn't have any superpowers. She's not like an alien. It was a little perplexing to me and astonishing at the same time. And I thought, man, she's doing something right. And, you know, I don't know what it is. All I know is whatever it is, she's doing it right. And I must not be doing it right because I'm cleaning her floors, you know. And one day I mustered up all the courage, because I could tell she was in an extra good mood, and she knew who I was. She saw me. I was there every Wednesday. And so I mustered up all the courage that a snot-nosed 16-year-old could muster up. And I'm going to go up and ask June Martino a question. So I went up to her, and I got to tell you, I was shaking in my janitorial boot. And I went up to her, and I said, hi, June. She said, hi. I mean, just very approachable, astonishingly so. And I said, can I ask you a question? She said, sure. And I said, well, could you tell me about it? And she said, well, what's that? And I said, well, the whole McDonald's thing. I'm not kidding, Maurice. I asked her in the morning. She put her arm around me, brought me in the kitchen, and the entire day told me the entire story. And if you remember in the movie, she was working for Ray Kroc when he was a milkshake mixer salesman, which is how he met the brothers.
Yes.
She starts the story there, before he even meets the brothers, and goes through the whole thing step by step all the way up to the moment we're sitting in the kitchen and everything in between. She even has the maid and butler bringing us food in the kitchen so she can keep telling me the story. And I'm thinking, man, who's she talking to? I'm astonished she's even, you know, taking the time out of her day to say hi to me, let alone, you know, feed me, bring me, you know, in the kitchen and just telling this whole story. So there's a, you'll remember this movie. You'll remember this part because it was a drama scene. You know, Hollywood spin through the whole movie. It really, believe me when I tell you, there was a lot of spin on that movie. That, you know, it's great interest and all that kind of stuff. But nonetheless, there is an event that's mentioned in the movie, and it's a time where June, who kept the books, goes to Ray, Michael Keaton, and says, "We don't have any money. We're not in the big money. This is the amount we're getting on our royalties, and money's going out more than coming in. There's no money left." She told me about that event decades before the movie ever came out. Didn't happen just the way the movie said, but nonetheless, the event happened. And she said, so Ray and I made an agreement that I would keep working for him and he would not pay me. There was no money anyway, so he couldn't pay me. So, but I just kept working even though he wasn't paying me. And he began to pay me in worth less than zero company stock in McDonald's at the time. And he would take some of the bill collector phone calls so people wouldn't have me on the phone. So I asked her, Maurice, I just simply said, why'd you do it? Mm. And she sat back in her chair and did this eye lock on me. And I could tell, I just asked her a question no one else had ever asked her before. Everyone always wanted to know what happened with McDonald's, but no one ever wanted to know why. So I said, and all I did was just ask her why. Cause I said, June, I said, you know, I'm a janitor. I said, I work Friday to Friday, paycheck to paycheck. If I don't get paid on Friday, I'm not showing on Saturday, you know? And I said, why'd you do it? And she sat back and does this eye lock on me for about 10 seconds and it seemed like 30 minutes. And I could tell she truly had just left the room, even though she's staring right at me eyeball to eyeball, to the point that I was almost a little uncomfortable. And then I remember what she said so succinctly that it made the hair stand up on the back of my neck. And then I remember, even today, the very first thought I had. So when she replied, Mr. June, why'd you work for nothing? She said to me, because I believed in Ray. And I remember my first thought, Maurice, was, that's it. That's the answer. I need to find me a Ray Kroc. I need to find someone could bring me under their wing. It certainly didn't work out too bad for June. I'm cleaning her $1 million mansion, you know? And I said, that's it. I don't even know what I don't know. I don't even know what I should be know, but I do know I need to find someone who can teach me all this stuff, put me under his wing like Ray Kroc put June under, and then I can learn what I need to so I can be rich and happy. Not realizing, Maurice, I even had that backwards back then at 16 years old. We should be happy then rich, not rich then happy. But at 16 years old, I'm all about the money, right? You know, money. You know, people really live like this. And I cleaned her son's home. She bought homes for all three of her sons, which were also in Ginger Creek. You know, so, I mean, I was just astonished that she was just seemed like a really nice person. And so I did something inadvertently, Maurice, that I think really did have a big impact on my life to how much of it unfolded. I just ignorantly, intelligently, meaning I didn't even know what I was doing, but I inadvertently tripped across and did the right thing. I threw it out there and I just simply said, where's my Ray Kroc? Where would I meet him at? Now, I never said I'm not going to meet him, and I never thought I wasn't going to meet him. I just figured he's out there somewhere, so I just got to meet mine because June certainly met hers. And the only difference between June Martino and I was that she obviously knew something I didn't know, or number two, was doing something I wasn't doing. There's only two options. There's no other options other than those two things. And I need to find out, number one, what she knows, and number two, I need to start doing it because I'm cleaning her floors, right? So I threw that out there. And later on, my business mentor taught me that I had inadvertently done the right thing because, as he taught me, he said one of the many, many things he taught me was he said, you know, people live backwards. He said they always want the answer. Everyone wants to go through life. Give me the answer. Teach me the answer. I want to learn the answer. Seeking the answer. Wrong. He said it's the wrong approach. And that's why one of the many reasons they don't make it. He said, don't worry about the answers. The answers are omnipresent. They're always there. Focus on asking the right question. So when I asked the right question inadvertently, I said, where's my Ray Kroc? Where am I going to meet my Ray Kroc? I inadvertently, not even realizing, Maurice, what I'd done, I asked the right question. And it wasn't about three months later, at the janitorial service, I was there in the evening because, you know, the owner of the company, Jerry, he was like a friend of the family. We were talking after hours and I had already punched out. You know, I'd already done my cleaning for the day. So the phone rings. He picks up the phone, talks a few minutes, hangs up the phone. He says, oh, that's some guy from Detroit. And he's in and he's opening a diamond store and they're doing a rebuild and he wants to see some carpet samples for his diamond store. And he's leaving back on a plane tomorrow morning. And I said, okay, what's that got to do with me? He said, well, I need you to go. And I said, no, I'm not going. Now we're going to count, Maurice, how many times I say no. So I said, I'm not going. Jerry, I'm tired, man. I've been cleaning all day. I've been, you know, I'm physically fatigued. I'm mentally fatigued. And I've already punched out. He said, I need you to go do an estimate on this carpeting. I said, Jerry, no, I'm not going. You know, I don't know how to bid out carpeting. I can bid out cleaning, you know, how long it takes to clean a place, and I know how to vacuum carpeting and shampoo and stuff. I don't know how to bid out an actual carpet job for new carpeting. I said, I'm not going. He said, you need to go, man. I need you to go. And I said, Jerry, I'm telling you, I'm just not going. And so three times I've said no already. And he said, I'll tell you what, if you go, I'll give you your pick of any Saturday off you want. Mm-hmm. Now, Maurice, for a janitor, that's a huge negotiation chip because we're cleaning when businesses are closed. So, you know, so on Saturday when they're closed, we're cleaning morning till night. So I wanted to make sure my ears didn't get tricked right then. So I repeated it back to him and I said, oh, Jerry, okay. Now you said any Saturday I went off? And he said, yeah, any Saturday. And I said, okay, Jerry, I'll go. So I opened up the hatch on my Rolls Canardly, and I threw my thrown carpet samples in the back. Now, setting the stage for your listeners, I'm physically exhausted. It's nighttime already because the phone call came in the janitorial service after dinner time. So it's already, you know, it's approaching mid evening. I'm physically exhausted. I'm working all day, mentally fatigued. I'm getting ready to do something I've never done before. So I'm not too wild about that. I don't know how to do a carpet job or an estimate on carpeting. And I'm going to meet a guy from Detroit. Seriously. a guy from Detroit. I want to meet some of Detroit, like a hole in the head, you know. And I'm all these things are going through my mind, right? And I'm not doing it for my boss. I'm not doing it for him. There's only one reason I'm doing this whole thing, Maurice, and you know what that one thing is.
Yes. Right?
That's the only reason I'm doing this. Little do I know, I'm getting ready to meet the man that will change the trajectory of my life forever. The man that will become the father I never had, even though I had a father. And I will become the son he never had, even though he had a son. This will be, and I'm getting ready to meet Maurice, my Ray Kroc. And I've already said no to it three times. But wait, it doesn't end there. First of all, when I meet him, have you ever had the feeling, Maurice, where when you first meet someone, you're so comfortable? For some reason, it's inexplicable, but yet you sense it and you know it's there. You're so comfortable talking with them, you almost feel like you've known them before.
Yes.
Okay. Same kind of thing. All right. So we sit there. So I'm talking with this guy in this, you know, location is going to be rebuilt out. It sort of tore up a little bit. And we're talking about anything and everything for like 2 hours. The carpet. That was a no sale because he needed something plush for a diamond store and, you know, something really nice. And all we had was office grade, you know, commercial grade stuff. So I'm throwing the carpet samples back in my Rolls canardly, getting ready to leave. And he offers me a job. Mm-hmm. I said, no, number four. No, I said, no. I said, I don't know anything about diamonds. He said, well, I'll teach you. And I said, no. I said, all I know about diamonds, that's number five, by the way. I said, all I know about diamonds, number one, they're expensive. And number two, someday, I'll ask me, that I know about diamonds. And he said, no. I said, I'll teach you. And I said, I'm all set. No. Right. So now I've said no six times. As I'm walking out the door, leaving, little did I know at that point, I genuinely had already been talking to a genius in the puritanical sense, not the IQ baloney. And quite candidly, I don't believe in the IQ baloney because I've met a lot of educated idiots in my life. Yeah, all the information, all the knowledge, they can spew it back at you, but have zero implementation skills and zero execution skills. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll bring on a person with wisdom who knows what to do and when to do it over a person who is an educated idiot any day of the week. So I don't believe in the IQ thing, but I didn't know I was talking to a gentleman who was a genius as it relates to human engineering, the kind of guy that could sit down and talk to you for 10 minutes, look in your eyes the whole time, and he's got you down pat. He knows who you are, really, right? That kind of guy. So as I'm walking out the door, he hits me with something that I don't know, but he knows will really get my goat and grind me. So as I'm walking out the door, he says, I even remember the tone he used. He said, what do you have to lose? You could always go back being a janitor. And I thought, I'm all set. People can always make a mess. I can always clean it up. I can get a job anywhere. My future is all forecast in front of me. And so I left. So now I'm driving. And it's starting to grind on me. I thought, you know, what do you mean by that? I could, you know, yeah, it's true. I mean, I could work anywhere and I could get a job anywhere. But what's he mean about that? What I got to lose part. Well, that's sort of, and so now I'm halfway home. By the way, Maurice, it's almost midnight now. Mm-hmm. And I'm halfway home and now it really gets my goat. I'm getting miffed at this point. And I turned the car around. I said, I'm going to find out exactly what he meant by that. So I turned the car around and I thought, well, he's going to be gone. He had to leave on a plane first thing in the morning back to Detroit. He's still there. So we reach an agreement. I start working for him. And for the next 4 months, I get in the car at 4 a.m. Friday night, Saturday morning, 4 a.m, drive all the way from Chicago to Detroit, 301 miles. I did it so many times, I remember the exact mileage. Mm. I drive 6 hours there, meet with them for 6 hours, then get back in the car and drive all the way home for 6 hours and did that the exact same day, once a weekend on that same Friday night, Saturday morning, every single month for 4 months in a row in the heart of winter. And I can share with you, I did it because I realized he knew what I wanted. I knew what I wanted. And he was testing me to see if I was really serious about all the things I was saying or if it was just talk. So, yeah, I was being tested and tested for months if I would do something no one else would be crazy enough and dumb enough to do. And I can share with you, Maurice, if there was something I did do right, was I wasn't too proud to be able to say, I don't know. I would love to learn that. You know, where it, and I think so many people are so wrapped up in wanting to always look good and wanting to always look as the smartest person in the room and, you know, the ego thing, or as my business mentor taught me, the smallest package in the world is one all wrapped up in itself. And, you know, I mean, so I did have that ability to humble myself and say, you know, I don't know. I really, and maybe that was because my father was a milkman. So I started out at the bottom, you know, I mean, it was, where are you going to go from there? And so maybe that was all part of it, but I can share with you that that all played a role with my ability to learn and be a sponge, because I recognized there were so many other people that had it together and I didn't yet. And so my business mentor began to rewire those burnt out wires in my mind. The son of a milkman, burnt out janitor who thinks his fun time of the day is getting free songs on a jukebox, cleaning bowling alleys at 2 a.m, to rewiring my mind and getting me to think differently and look at things differently and reframing them in my mind. So I share with your listeners, if you don't have a mentor, you need to talk to Maurice right now. Because if you don't have a mentor, you need to get one. Because how else are you going to upskill? Someone says, well, you know, I know all the stuff. That's a sophomoric attitude. The best thing we can do is say, I don't know. I'd love to learn that. And I found that really, really successful people, and I've been blessed to be taught by billionaires with a B, because I had the ability to say, and I really meant it, you know, I don't know. And I think that might have been the thing, Maurice, that June Martino sort of picked up on me way back when. She knew when I said, could you tell me about it, that I really genuinely wanted to know what happened. I wasn't just the June Martino, this icon of the area. And I think she sensed the difference. The 16-year-old kid just really genuinely wanted to know. I was intrigued and that kind of thing. So I share for your listeners, number one, don't be too smart for your own good. If you don't have a mentor, in my world, we call that naive. It's time to get a mentor if you don't. And you need to talk to how you get a mentor, or have him mentor you if you can, because you will then learn some of the things you haven't learned. What if you learn one thing you didn't know before that makes all the difference in the world? So my business mentor, Maury, he shared with me so many things. And a couple of nuggets I'll share with you. One of them he taught me was, and this became critical now, every adversity, not some, every in life carries with it the seed of an equal or great benefit. And he said, as us as leaders, it's up to us to move aside the leaves and find those seeds that are hidden, because they're always there, not sometimes, always. Now, my business mentor is teaching me that. It was later on confirmed by over 1,000 millionaires that I interviewed. In a 2-year time period, I had a radio talk show, and I interviewed in 2 years over 1,000 millionaires. And my best part, Maurice, was me being able to talk with them and ask them questions that intrigued me and I wanted to know off the air, you know, before and after the interview. That was where I was really into it. And there's interesting that they genuinely had some commonalities. One of them was as follows. All of them, not some of them, not a few of them, all 1,000 plus millionaires, all had a time in their life where everything told them to stop. Their family said, stop. Don't take the next step. Their business said, stop. Their finances said, stop. The economy said, stop. On and on and on. They had this long list of all the reasons they should stop and not do the next step. They all had that story. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. And many of them, all of them did the next thing, but many of them, which was sort of weird to me, some of them even, what I'm about to say next, even used the same words when they explained what happened next. And these are people, they didn't know each other, different time periods, different industries, you know, over the couple of years. These people didn't know each other. Some of them said, Maurice, do you know I took the next step out of morbid curiosity to see what else could possibly go wrong? And did I miss anything? You know, they said everything had gone wrong. And, you know, is there anything I missed? I'm curious to see if I missed something, because I think I hit all the wrongs. And they said they took that next step. And when they did, they said the next part was almost mysterious. How when they took that next step, things began to connect and go together almost on its own. And some of them said, even in spite of them, it began to connect and come together. And it was, they said it was weird, like it was almost like temporary defeat exited their lives and went into someone else's life because figured this guy doesn't know when to quit. So I'm just going to go goof up someone else's. This person clearly just keep going. And they said, and then that's when it happened. That was the turning point. Isn't it interesting that 1,000+ millionaires all said the same thing? So my business mentor taught me, number one, get rid of the word failure. Do not say it. Do not make it a part of your vernacular. It's the F-bomb. It's the ultimate F-bomb. Get rid of failure, he says, because it sounds and feels too eternal. He said, supplant that word with the words temporary defeat. He said, because you're going to get tackled in life and you're going to be tackled a lot. And when you stand up after being tackled, you're going to realize, hey, I just got a first down. And he said, you're still in the game. When you said failure and you use the word failure, you throw yourself out of the game. Stay in the game. So reframe it in your mind as a temporary defeat. And since every adversity carries with the seed of an equal or greater benefit, he said, then we move aside the leaves because we know the seeds are there. The seeds we need are there. We move aside those leaves. And we're going to find those seeds, and those seeds are the things we need to get up to the next level. And the next thing I'm going to say, Maurice, is going to bake the noodles of some of your listeners. They're going to say, this guy lives in Michigan. If that's the way they are in Michigan, I'm never going to Michigan. He's lost it. Because when I say the next thing, until you really start to think it through, it's going to sound like the wildest thing anyone could ever say. My business mentor shared with me and taught me, when we really begin to understand the role the temporary defeat plays in our lives, and that every temporary defeat has those that we need, and we move aside the leaves to find them, that's our heart. He said, when we really begin to supplant impetuousness with wisdom, we will begin to, and here it comes, welcome and embrace temporary defeat when it shows up. And you say, man, that's crazy. I'm going to welcome temporary defeat? I'm going to embrace it? Well, the answer is yes, because when we understand what it brings with it, that seeds, and those seeds are the seeds we needed that would not have shown up without the temporary defeat. And those are the seeds that will bring us to the next step and the next step. And when we can welcome temporary defeat faster, when we can embrace it faster and move on past it and find the seeds, he said, we will not only move up the stairs to prosperity and happiness and success, not walking. He said, you'll get into a flat run later on up those stairs because you won't be coming from a place of fear. You won't be coming from a place of, what's everyone going to say? How are they going to feel about me? I'm not going to look good. None of that stuff's going to be, you're not coming from that place anymore. You're going to be coming from a place of, show me the seeds. I'm ready. I'm going to do the next step. So these are all of this together. All of my business mentor, these 1,000 millionaires all got sifted together into ultimately and happened as a result of something digressing. When I was 19 years old, dressing back for a minute to finish off the mentor story. When I was 19, I asked Sam Robbins, my business mentor, I said, could you teach it all to me? Some of the things like I just mentioned that he taught me. I said, don't hold back. Tell me it all. I want it all. He said, okay, I will. But I want one thing from you. I want to let you know, Maurice, whatever he said next, I'm in yes mode. I'm going to say yes. He said, this is what I want. When the time is right, and you will know that time, I want you to tell as many people as possible and teach as many people as possible everything that I taught you. So at 19 years old, Maurice, I made a vow. I made a commitment. At 19, I made an oath to my business mentor that caused me to go down the path that you originally asked me about. That knowledge manifest is what we know as Givers University. About, and that's how I ended up going down that whole path.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing. And even during the infancy, you were doing your janitorial job and you began getting contracts, which was a step above that. And you met your mentor. Well, first, you talked to, was it Jean, Miss Jean?
June Martino.
And, you know, she saw the openness that you had, the willingness to learn. And from there, you met your mentor. You were fearful because, you know, this was solid. This janitorial thing was solid. It was a home base, you know, even though it wasn't everything you wanted it to be in that moment, it was safe. So you were wanting to play it safe, and who would become your mentor, he challenged you. He said, well, you know, you could always go back, you know, to your janitorial job. So that sparked your curiosity. What do you mean by that? So you began to follow. And it's just amazing that you had to overcome the fear. We all have to overcome the initial fear, and we have to tell ourselves, if nobody else tells us, what do I have to lose? I can just sit here and just stay there and not challenge myself into becoming everything that I have dreamed of becoming, and the thoughts and all these different things. And the kindness, the Givers University that you're part of, where you created, like, when you were talking about that, Jean Martino, I thought about the story in the book by Dale Carnegie. I don't know if you've ever, you've probably read the book yourself.
Multiple times.
Yes. So the story he talked about the sun and the wind, they had a quarrel about who was stronger. And the wind said, I'm stronger to the sun. I'm stronger than you. And I'll prove it. So the sun hid behind a cloud and the wind began to, he said, you see the old man down there with the coat on? I bet you I can make him take his coat off before you can. So the wind began to blow and it blew until it almost became a tornado. But the harder it blew, the tighter the old man clutched his coat. So the wind finally gave up and the sun came from behind the cloud and began to shine. And he began to beam on that old man. And not before long, the old man took a neckerchief out of his pocket and began to pat his brow. And not before long, he took off his coat. And the sun said to the wind, he said, gentleness and friendliness is far more effective than fury and force. So we have to have this gentleness and this goodness within us to help us navigate through the rocks of life and the bumpiness of life. So we can get to the point because we don't know everything. Even though we might have a dream or we may have whatever, want to become something, there's somebody else that has the key, that key thing, that key ingredient to help us get to the point and the place that we want to get to. And just like you were that placed upon you by your mentor, tell as many people as you can, and you've been carrying that mantle and giving throughout the world for years upon years, and you've been the missing ingredient in so many people's lives to help them overcome and come into that place that they really desire to be in.
Thank you so much for saying that, and I heartily agree. And it was one of the things you had mentioned. Which I agree. My business mentor, when I told him, I said, you know, I want to be a millionaire. You know, this was, you know, it was right after maybe I was 18, 19 years old, and he said, well, I can tell you this. He said, do you know earning $1 million will be the easiest thing you'll ever do? He said, I can tell you what'll be the hardest. And I said, what's that? He said, believing you're worth it. He said, that was the hardest part. And I can share with you, and it wasn't me, by the way. I can just share with you, all I did was apply what my mentor taught me. I became a millionaire at 21, and at 33 years old, that was the first year I had earned $1 million in personal income after I paid, that wasn't business income, that was my personal income. After I paid my taxes, I had $1 million left in my pocket from 1 year's income. Now, was that all me? No, I did what was needed, but I can share with you without the information and doing it the right way. That's why people always say, you know, cliches are usually cliche because they're usually right, but not always. One of them I take issue with. There's a few of them, and one of them is practice makes perfect. This is wrong. Practice never made perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. And people are always practicing the wrong way. That's why they need a mentor. That's why they need a Maurice. That's why they need to listen to the new Mind Creator podcast, because it's a form of mentoring. And that helps them get outside of their comfort zone and do that next step that they can get in touch with the things that really can be spectacular in their lives. And these are things we teach with Givers University. We actually have a course, a series of courses that's called Give to Be Great. And it consists, number one, the first one is called the Giver's Mindset. Givers think differently than takers. And then the second course is called Giver's Lifestyle. We identify the 30 habits that you can see givers do over and over again, and the 30 habits you see takers do. Then the third course is called the Giver's Lifelong Learning. And that we identify the 6 prisons that people walk around in that they don't even realize they're in. So the whole series of courses is called Give to Be Great. And it's a condensation of all of this information from my mentor and 1,000 millionaires, all sifted down into an applicable course that can be used for business or in family or even socially. And if I can share with you real quickly what we actually teach that makes us so unique that only is taught right now currently at Givers University, if I can share that with you, if I may.
Yes, of course.
First of all, I say emphatically to all your listeners, we love everybody. I say it again. We love everybody. And we teach at Givers University, which no one else does, how to separate the person who we love from their deeds, which we may not love. And we use a very, very granular approach, not broad, innocuous swaths of information that sound good. And then after you think about it, you go, that sounded good, but what do I do with that now? You know, we have actually, Maurice, identified the actual deeds to look for, the things they will do that you can observe that will help you discern relationships in your life. And discernment is very important because when we observe these deeds, we begin to now think, should I bring this person closer into my life? Because givers bring with them the 3 W's of wisdom, wealth, and wellness. And I can build my giver community by having these people around me. Or should I begin respectfully distancing myself? Not nasty or rude, but respectfully distance myself. Because takers bring with them the 3 D's of takers, which is defeatism, disruption, and destruction. So I ask your listeners, think about the fires you stomp out every day right now. Think about the times when your stress level goes through the roof every day. Think about the conversations you have that at the end of the conversation, you don't even remember what you talked about, but you do know one thing for sure, you have no more energy left. They drained it all from you. All 3 of those things, Maurice, they all have one thing in common. There's a name attached to them, and no one's teaching us how to discern in our relationships. Now, I'm a self-improvement geek. I love self-improvement. I think it's important. I'm positive you are, and I'm sure many, many of your listeners are as well. That's a great thing. Self-assessment, self-improvement, upskilling. Awesome. I'm into it 100%. But one thing that's not being taught, Maurice, is how about the other guy? What if he's not doing it right? What should I do about that? Mm. And these people will influence our lives in huge ways that we don't pay attention to. So right now, this is what we teach. And if I was to use by analogy, if I was to see you, Maurice, and I could tell that your eyes were a little itchy, maybe your nose was runny, from those symptoms that I'm observing, I could begin to discern and assess, well, Maurice may have a cold. I'm not able to see the cold, but the cold is the cause that causes the symptoms. supplant symptoms with deeds. We teach people, even by virtue of actual checklists that we give them, we teach them these checklists. Look for these actual deeds, very granular. These, watch them doing these things. And when you do, you can begin to discern, should I bring them in closer? Or should I begin respectfully distance myself? Because if I bring a person who's doing the wrong deeds closer into my life, they're going to make me collateral damage. And what's going to happen to my productivity? It's going to go straight through the floor because I'm stomping out fires not of my making now. What's going to happen to my stress level? It spikes. It goes up instead of going down. What happens to my energy level? It goes down because I have the wrong people around me. It's like this a few interviews back. A gentleman said, wow, this is great stuff. I really like this. You're right. No one's teaching it. And I just read a book that said I need to have five good people around me. And I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. You do need to have five good people around you. I have one question. Which five? And all of a sudden I was staring at him because, you know, it was a video thing. And he had this blank look on his face. I'm looking at these little orphan Annie eyes in front of me because he got the point. No one's teaching which five. Which five should we, because people will influence us. Maurice, we have businesses open and closing faster than ever before in history.
Yes.
Products being antiquated overnight. So what do we have left? Our relationships. That's it. And no one's teaching us how to discern our relationships. So when we use the term giver, we're not labeling a person. We don't label people. We're identifying giver deeds. When we say taker, we're not labeling a person as a taker. We're labeling their deeds, taker deeds. So we teach people how to discern. And as a direct result from that, their productivity goes through the roof. Their stress level goes way down and their energy goes up because they now surrounded themselves and have learned how to discern in their relationships. And it's something so critical today that simply is not being taught. What should we look for specifically, very granular, the actual deeds we can watch them doing that will help us decide, should I bring this person closer or should I begin respectfully distancing myself because they're about ready to make me unwilling and potentially unwitting collateral damage. So that's what we teach.
Wow. Wow. And people could get in contact with you through your website, Givers University?
Yes, they go to the website, and here's what they're going to get. Our website's going through a huge upgrade right now, so it'll be in the next week or two, they'll see the new version. So if they don't see the newsletter sign up, just check back in a couple of weeks. It's on there because I think it's already been moved to the new site that hasn't yet been published. But here's what happens. When someone signs up, we have a newsletter that is absolutely 100% free. And someone would simply sign up for it. It's going to be on every page of the website. And we don't pelt people's emails. I quite candidly, Maurice, I hate that. I sign up for something. Next thing you know, I'm getting 8 emails a day from them. And then I just unsubscribe. Because we send out one email a week, usually on a Thursday. And that email has good content, valuable tools they can put in their toolbox that's going to help them in their personal life. Also discerning in relationships. And it's one email a week. So when they sign up for the email, they're going to get, you know, a confirmation email sent to them that because we don't spam. So they have to say, yeah, I want to get information from them. And then as soon as they confirm that, they're going to get a free download that is called What Are the Six Arrows That Takers Shoot at Givers? It's a great one-page checklist. About 2 days later, they're going to get another email. That's a freebie. And this checklist is specifically relating to, and it is one of my favorite ones, it's the 25 do's. And these 25 do's is it's a two-page checklist of the actual 25 deeds to look for that when someone's doing 13 of them, you might think, you know what, they're being a little bit takerish. I may want to reevaluate whether I have them close in my life or not. So they're going to get those checklists as freebies from us. And then once a week, they're going to get an email from us that will have a helpful tool, ideas, thoughts. We put out a weekly 2-minute video that's called Discern. We put that out every week on YouTube. They'll get a copy of that in the newsletter. So we just, once a week, they're going to get something and we nurture the relationships. And then from that, they find out who we are and what we're doing. And we invest in relationships. We're relationship builders because we realize after it's all said and done today, that's one of the last things we have left.
Powerful. I mean, this is just scratching the surface of the wealth of information that and knowledge and wisdom that you have. And wow, very impactful. And what is your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with?
Such a great question. This one my business mentor shared with me. He convinced me the value of saying this every single day. And I've said it every day for decades. And it helped me get through the best of times. It helped me get through the more challenging temporary defeat times. And these three things were so critical. And it's three statements. And he convinced me to say it to myself. And I still do. And I share with your listeners, if you say anything to yourself every day, begin and commit to yourself that you will begin to say the following three things to yourself each and every day. And these are them. I will never give up. I will keep rising up. And I will always overcome.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.